Blog Talk Radio.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth, and I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preached what I should and I should not do, and the choir sang. Tried to be a good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore, and this world I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will break the noise. Try to beat me down. Tell me to shut my mouth. But there's a time to speak, and the
Welcome to No Small Gain with Beth Harris and Annabeth. This is Viata. I'm in the studio, and I'm going to turn it over to Beth to introduce her co-host and her guest. Beth, are you there?
Yes. Do you hear me well?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Go ahead. Oops, I think Beth dropped off, so I'm going to open up. Is this Annabeth? Are you there? Annabeth, are you there? Okay, let's see. Beth's phone dropped. Let me see what's going on here. Annabeth, are you there? Okay, let's open up. Let's see, 561-207. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Who is this?
This is Annabeth.
Oh, Annabeth. I thought you were on the 111111 line.
No. Nope.
Okay. Welcome, Annabeth. It appears Beth's line has dropped off for a minute. If you like to go ahead and introduce the show today and then introduce the guest. Okay, I think Beth is back. Let me open up her mic. Beth, are you there?
Yes. Had no idea that this dropped. I was talking the whole time. I'm like, what? Okay.
Okay.
But thank
Annabeth,
you.
Annabeth's mic is open as well, so I just don't see your guests. I don't know if they're here or not because I do have a couple of callers, but he has to press 1 for me to open up his mic.
Okay, fine. And I'm sure he will. Annabeth? Hello?
Yes.
Savannah?
Hi there.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes. I hope you hear me well. Not sure what's going on with my phone. Yes. And, of course, Annabeth is in Spain. I want you to just share a little bit what's going on. You started a blog, and what did you do for yesterday, the Women's International Day?
Yesterday... Wait, I did something special. And I was with a group. I'm part of a healing group. We do energetic healing for the planet once a week. And we meet on Wednesdays. And so we were focused in particular on the emotional water energies of the planet, the feminine energies of the planet that affect all of us. That was one of the areas that we focused on in particular, yeah.
Nice.
So I'm over in Spain. I'm living between Spain and South Florida. And, yeah, been traveling around and checking out really interesting energetic sites in the mountains here, doing energetic healing, experiencing the planet, the land. The energies are different here. So we have this delightful blog that we've started. It's called whispering-earth.com. And I'm delighted to be able to use the technology to be connected with all of you in South Florida while I'm over here.
I know. I tell you, it's wonderful. As a matter of fact, that's how I connected with our guest. And it was, I know this seems a little strange to say, but it was like an answered prayer. I think many of you have heard me say, to combat human trafficking, it will take all of us. It has nothing to do with whether we have the faith or we're faithless. We have to all work together to eradicate this issue, you know, mass incarceration, all the ills in society that we have to address. We have to destroy all walls that would divide us. You know, it's that saying, divide and conquer. So together, we are able to combat these issues that seem so overwhelming. The only reason that they are is because we have not yet tried the unity, right? So we can't speak of it as not working until we actually move in that direction. So I am grateful for the guest today because he is a bridge builder. That's what impressed me about him. He was, with his idea that he's going to share with us how he became an atheist. Now, Annabeth, you and I attend a humanist Quaker meeting. When you're in the States, you and I attend the same Quaker house. And what's interesting about Quakerism, it really doesn't matter your belief. I mean, you can be Christian, you can be an atheist Quaker, you can be an evangelical Quaker. That is one of the things that I am drawn to you about the concept in that it really is not going to allow walls to divide us. And that's really what every faith should actually represent. But right now I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce our guest.
So Alex Jules, a fascinating person, and I think you'll probably find the same thing in this talk, who is a scholar, a Harvard graduate, and a writer, and a very conscious, very aware social activist and atheist. So it seems to me that what I appreciate is there seems to be such a connection for Alex between social activism and his, I don't know whether he calls it belief or non-belief. We will find out that from him. And he's a founding member of a free thought organization. He lives in Texas, in the Dallas area, and also works with the American Humanist Association. He's also an organizer for the Black Nonbelievers of Dallas and writes for a variety of different publications. In particular, was the first atheist who was featured in Ebony magazine. Alex actually comes from Brooklyn originally and grew up in a very religious Catholic family and spent time studying many different types of religions. And so he comes to atheism from an experiential background in religion and also an academic background in religion. So shall we see if Alex is on the line with us now?
I think I'm...
Alex?
Oh, yep, can you hear me?
Welcome. Yes. Welcome.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, so good. Yes, we're very happy about you being with us. So I'm just going to let you go ahead and start, or we'll have you start before, I guess, you, Mayor Annabeth, will ask a question. So share with us what's going on currently.
Currently, In my neck of the woods, we're doing a lot of additional grassroots building with many churches and various social organizations. We're doing a lot of expansion in terms of social justice issues. The American Humanist Association has a wonderful, I think it would be called an outreach program. It's called the Black Humanist Alliance, which I'm now part of, and we're doing a lot of the connecting that we think needs to happen if we're going to address a lot of these social ills that continue to plague us, generally speaking. So that's where we are right now. There's, in particular, in the African American Black community, we also celebrated in February the, I think this is the fourth day. I think it was February 19th, day of non-belief for Black non-believers, which has been a growing thing that that was started by Doug Wright out in Houston, who is also another prominent Black atheist in the community. And that was a day of trying to get people out and acknowledging the fact that Black atheists or Black non-believers generally do exist. And we've historically always been here, whether it's been shadowed or obfuscated in different language, free thinkers, non-believers, non-theist, various different coded words for the same thing. Don't believe in a deity of any sort. It's one of those days where we get to come out and mix with a couple of people. We get to celebrate either just knowing each other or just being here. It's more just of an acknowledgement. So that's what's been going on in my neck of the woods.
It's interesting because I heard you mention that you are working with a number of churches. Is that what you said?
Oh, yeah, always. When you're dealing with some of the issues whether it's in the African American or minority communities, when we're dealing with things such as refugees and some of the political issues that are very human rights oriented, there's nowhere near enough atheists out there, not in the States anyway, where we can just have the convenience, nor that we'd be looking for it, but we don't have the convenience to say we're only going to work with atheist or secular organizations. That's just not there. When you take a look at the infrastructure that exists in communities, many times they are wrapped around a church or wrapped around some form of beliefs. In the Jewish communities, it's the synagogue and the mosque with the Muslims, etc. So if you're going to try and have an impact on a community, you almost have to go there to do that. Now, of course, that brings several different challenges just outright. You know, some of them were very, very resistant to working with us in the past because it's somewhat threatening working with someone you don't understand, which tends to be the biggest hurdle for many Christians or believers in general, not understanding what atheism is, what it means. Is it scary? is where do we get our morals from? How can we want to partner? Am I coming to deconvert you? Is always a big one. So trying to get over many of those hurdles tends to be really difficult. And there are two ways of addressing it. You can either take it on head on, address some of those myths, try and build around it, or you can torch it and walk away, which gets no one anywhere very quickly. So usually the first several weeks, sometimes very, months, when we're working with organizations that are very different than us or than ours, you've got to get past the getting to know you phase. And that particular belief or lack of belief is actually a really big one, especially in the U.S.
Well, you actually brought up the question, what is atheism?
So that's
I know there are different aspects of it too. So
it's really very simple. A lot of people make it more complicated than it needs to be, because of all the various degradations or variations, of what that term is. And so you can look at it from different aspects, but the one common denominator when it comes to atheism is the lack of belief in a god or a deity. Now, you can that's it. If you don't believe in a deity, you're an atheist. There are different prefaces and suffixes that we tend to put on top, and then we like to describe other things that go with it. But when you reduce it, that's all atheism is. You don't believe in a god. There's this wonderful play on words, is, you know, there are 1,000 gods out there. You believe in one, I believe in one less than you. That's really just the functional difference of atheism versus theism. I don't have a dogma. Now, that's just flat out atheism. There's just no evidence for God based on our worldview. Now, there are other people that like to, again, preface the word atheist with agnostic atheism, which says, okay, well, I'm pretty sure that there is no God, but, you know, is there a way of truly knowing that there is a God? And so you'll have the agnostics, and which are a different thing, a different label, but there's this variation or a gradation that goes into, there's probably no evidence for it. And these are the agnostic atheists. I do not have any knowledge of this God, so therefore I'm an atheist. And many atheists, I'd say most atheists, kind of fall into that particular label. And then you do have a few hardcore atheists. We like to call them the Big A atheists. There was something that was created several years ago called the Dawkins Scale, is fairly arbitrary, but how strong is your atheism if we had to rate it? And this is, again, a question of knowledge and what do you know, which is a philosophical question, versus what you can prove. When you go to all the way right, the hard A atheist or the hard atheist, big A atheist, you have those that say, not only is there no proof, or I see no proof of there being a God, we are pretty sure that there is no God, and the evidence is completely lacking. So I can say more definitively that the evidence shows me that there is no God, just flat out. But again, it's a nuanced discussion or a nuanced argument. Now, on top of that, you have, again, the atheist tells you what you don't believe. Don't believe in God, but it says absolutely nothing about what you do believe. And that's where, once you get beyond that term, you have a much richer umbrella of belief and non-belief and what values are. Because I have met some very disgusting theists, evil theists, and same as evil atheists, not whatever. That almost doesn't matter. However, when we start looking at what we believe, well, you have the secular humanists, people that believe in a very natural, a natural world. There is no supernaturalism, and they believe that we're here to support each other. We are here to be with each other. We believe in humanity and some of the social goods, and we should be pushing forward, trying to define what social progress looks like. We believe in equality. We believe in embracing people and the lack of oppression. So you see, and if we find oppression, dismantling those systems of oppression. So when you see secular humanist or humanist in general, that's the common bond that we tend to go out there if we're seeking other values that we can match and talk to. It's really not the non-belief. It typically starts with, this is what we do believe in. And quite often, that is the easiest place to start and build on that. And, oh, yes, by the way, I don't believe in your deity, but would you paint me the same way, paint me the same color, if I was a Jainist or a Buddhist or Sikh, or any of the other religions which some do not have or lack a deity? Am I not a good person? No. So that's where we get into, again, the various shades of atheism. And getting to that understanding is usually the hardest part.
I think I understand what you're saying. It has nothing to do with the belief as to whether you're a good person, because we have heard of the horrors with people who are supposedly Christian. I mean, they just have some sick interpretation of scripture. I mean, we've heard all those different types of things happening too. So it definitely is a heart issue. H-E-A-R-T, a heart issue. How do we care? And I think one way to care about one another is when we care about all sentient beings and we care about our planet. If we teach our children, raise them to really, you know, tend to those things, what are they feeling? Yesterday, I was headed to an appointment, and someone just threw a bag of, I guess they were at McDonald's or wherever, but they just threw it out of the car. I mean, with everything just falling in right in the highway. It was like, just people don't care. They just have no sense. And that is really something to be cautious about, because they don't care about those little things, the little small things. There's a book that says, don't sweat the small stuff. But you need to show in those little small things, your tenderness, your compassion for everything, you know, even the little creatures. That's what I was drawn to about the Jans, how even the ants, you know, they try to be very careful not to even step on an ant. Now you broke down about the atheism on the scale, as you said, they came up with. What about with the humanism? Is there like a scale with that too? Because you mentioned secular humanism. So they're all different types. And as I, you know, read about atheism, you know, there are some who call themselves Christian atheists. So I know they're all different types. Go ahead.
Yeah, on the humanist scale, the common denominator there is just being humanist, and this is what the values really are based on, and that is that humanity, and that we owe each other some level of work in making our environment, our lives, everything that is around us better. And the real variations there tend to be, are you a secular humanist or are you a humanist? Because I've interacted with many different types of religious denominations that very much hold humanistic values, Quakers being one of them, UUs being the other, even some of the more moderate liberal Christians, Baptists tend to, you know, tend to show humanist values as well, again, depending on how strict they cohere to their dogma. And sometimes dogma gets in the way. It absolutely is. If you believe that, you know, for instance, that I am a product of the devil, they're trying to convert you, yeah, that's going to get in the way. However, when we get back to the humanist scale, it really tends to be bimodal, which is, you're either secular and you don't believe that there is a God, or believe that it should be, things should be kept in a secular light versus a non-secular light or something that is more religious. They're not mutually exclusive. They occasionally conflict, especially when it comes to political issues, political arena. That's when we'll have that problem. When we're talking about the separation of church and state, is the U.S. a Christian nation, et cetera? What kind of role does the government have in terms of your life and bodily autonomy? Are these laws a remnant of some of the worst of dogma that continue to reincarnate every passing and every generation? Or are we looking at dismantling those pieces as well? And so that's where we wind up occasionally having some real friction. But assuming that we can get beyond it, again, the humanist values tend to bubble up to the top. In fact, several secular organizations have had, and this is, you know, the atheist pushing or secular organizations have had, Christians, people that identify as Christian, leading them, just as you would look at the NAACP and you'll see white leadership there, and not mutually exclusive. Same thing here. It just tends to be, what is the wedge issue that we're working on?
Yes, Annabelle, I know you have some questions, so let you go ahead and ask away.
Well, I have two questions that I find interesting. First of all, when we got on this call, just before this call, I did something that I generally do before every time I start any kind of call. I sit for a moment, I meditate a little bit, and then I do my own little version of a prayer. I call in spirit, I call in the angelic world, my support, my angelic guides, to support and to bring light into the situation, to the call, to all the people. And then I thought to myself, gosh, what does Alex do? Does he do anything before he gets on a call or before he does anything where he feels it might be important to be prepared in some additional way? And I'm just curious.
I sweat. I sweat. I'll tell you a story. It was several years ago. I wound up having to do, and this was one of my very first big talks, and it was in Madison, Wisconsin. There were about 700 people in the audience. Now, I'm used to talking to 15, 30, maybe up to 100 people on any given day because of my job. I do a lot of public speaking, or I'm interacting with the public, or I'm interacting with customers, whatever. And I deal with stage fright occasionally, depending on the size. And I walk up to the podium, and I'm almost ready, and I look out and gaze into this audience, and there are about 700 people there, and I am minutes away from the introduction. I hand over the introductory notes to the announcer, and then I grab my notes, and I realize that they're not there. I have always used notes in talking, especially to the public, because it keeps me on track, it keeps me focused, etc. And here I was, just absolutely alone, finding that I knew what I was going to talk about. I had worked weeks on this presentation, and everything that I had, and all the wonderful things that keep me natural in front of people, again, just to make sure that I cover it all, they weren't there. I had no crutch. I had nothing there. And I got out there and I sweated. That's exactly what I did. Now, do I go through the breathing? Do I go through the self-reflection? Do I go through some of the meditation and going through those pieces? Absolutely. And it's a great way of starting any kind of conversation by getting your head right. Now, I don't call on anything specifically to assist in that, because I don't believe in something that is going to assist me in that. And that's kind of how I left religion in general. It's pulling away from the lack of this assistance based on what I was told and what I had learned, et cetera. And no, I don't call out for anything or anyone. I will look out to the people that are expecting me to say something or expecting to have a conversation with me. And so I draw, for lack of a better term, into that energy pretty quickly. And even when I've, and this was years ago, even when I do these talks now, and I've done much bigger talks, when I walk out there and have these conversations and I don't bring my notes, because it's happened several times since then, or I do have my notes and I don't need them because I'm having a dialogue with people that want to be there and listen to me, and I draw off that, again, quote unquote, energy. So I don't really pray out. Now, some atheists kind of sort of do it. They do it sometimes reflectively or reflexively, because it's something that they've always done. And so they'll sit and they'll do it. They'll do a little bit of a prayer. But it's not to a God. It's just talking out loud. And sometimes it's just talking out loud that calms them. And then even some people will do little tiny invocations for themselves. And that's always wonderful. But if they are materialistic, naturalistic in where they feel that there is some, you know, their grounding, then it's probably not going to be to a God. Now, there are some people who do identify as atheists that will tell you that there is no God, but they also believe in a spirit, in a spirit realm. Now, those aren't naturalistic atheists, and that's a very, very small number, very small number of people that do that. So when you talk about spiritualism, when you talk about you know, do ghosts exist, et cetera, especially in the United States versus the rest of the world. We have a very high concentration of people in the U.S. that believe in things like ghosts. So it doesn't surprise me that I would have a sample of those people in the nuns or in the 4%, depends on your number, you know, anywhere between 4 and 12% of the actual atheist population that's out there. It's just, it's not something that we do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yep.
That's very interesting. That was a very good question. Go ahead, Meredith.
It's practical because, you know, you wonder, mm-hmm. like, I mean, if one is so used to using one's beliefs and one's either religious background or one's training or one's spirituality that one has developed throughout one's life, it's a valuable tool. And so I think, well, you know, how do people function? What do they use when they're not using those? Another question that I have, like, in terms of what's going on in the world today in the United States or the world at large with atheism, in the introduction, it talks about you being a confessed atheist. And so what does confessed atheist mean nowadays? Is it still relevant, or does one still need to be, or do you still feel like you're confessing that you're an atheist? And what's happening in the world at large in terms of that? Are we still confessing or are we accepting?
No, I think we're when I first came out as an atheist, and now again, I grew up ultra religious, you know, honestly. I, at one point, I tell this story to my kids and to my friends who have heard this over the years. At one point, I was praying, easily more than a traditional Muslim. At one point, as a Christian, I was doing that. I was in church 2 to 3 times a week, which was excessive, but that was my background. And I really wanted to be a priest, et cetera. Now, when I was younger, the idea of atheism was just something that didn't happen, especially in the Black community. What do you mean you're an atheist? You got to believe in something. And up until I got into high school, I really had not met what this unicorn thing of an atheist. That word just made no sense to me whatsoever. You believe in something. I mean, you got to call it something. You may not want to call it a god, but you got to believe in, you know, the creator for something. Like, and that's where we get entangled in a lot of the details around words, and sometimes theism conflates nature with their god, and then that's when we get into big old arguments about, well, how do you know it was your god? Because this person over here is saying it's their god, and you call it two different things. Well, are they the same thing? Sure, but no, absolutely not. How can that happen? And so when I look at the times and the demographics then to the huge demographic shift that we've seen now, you take a look at the UK, we're now seeing in excess of 50% secularism. And these are people that are just flat out rejecting all forms of religion, and in a very large number of them being atheists. You take a look at Norway, Sweden, et cetera. Finland has almost no religion whatsoever, one of the safest places, most progressive places, you know, on the planet. It's a wonderful location. If you grew up there, it tends to have other issues, of course. But in the U.S., what we've seen is a steady decline in religiosity. And 5 years ago, it was maybe 10 years ago, finding atheists was hard. Now, not so much. Right now, we're looking at about 30% of the general population identifying as none, and again, 12 to 15% as atheists, depending on which survey that you like. And in, you know, the popularization of science and in the shadow of some of the more popular atheists out there. You have Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, the late Christopher Hitchens, et cetera. When you look at them and what they've been able to do with driving atheism and the visibility of atheism, oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, you know, people like Hitchens helped me realize what I was looking for. The arguments that I was having internally with my belief, I couldn't find the right words for it, because Hitchens helped me do that. Some of the arguments that I had been losing with myself, you know, like, hey, I could have that argument. And of course, this was on the heels of really big tragedy. 9/11 really did showcase some of the more direct implications that we have even today with religion, religious tension and belief, specifically with some factions of religion. So today, 5 years ago, if you said, you know, who is the most despised, untrusted demographic, it would have been atheists. Nobody trusts atheists. Today, it's not so much. In fact, you will have Muslims that are often cited as the least trustworthy in the United States. And that's, unfortunately, that's just what the reflection of culture has it today. So, no. And when I started, I would see people protesting at my events, and not so many protests today. I would see people lining up with various types of hate signs, et cetera. And that doesn't really happen, not when I'm talking about my belief. Now, when it comes to social ills, social culture, and the various isms that still plague us as a people, as a society, oh yeah, they show off all that stuff all day long. But it's not the big deal that it used to be. Now, that's in the general population. African American community, you know, we're seeing much higher numbers of religious coherence in the 95-97% range, right? That's far above anyone else here in the States, including the Latino and Hispanic community, which we're seeing anywhere between 8-10%.
Yes. Would you mind defining religious coherence? Just for the public, for, you know,
yeah.
It's a term that maybe some people are not familiar with.
Yeah,
at least
this is
the way you mean it.
Yeah. When you take a look at how we ask the questions on how you identify them, about 95-97% of African Americans will say that, yes, they are a Christian. And then above that, God has an active role in their lives. So you need both of those to really create what statistically, when we're measuring what religious coherence is.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
So you're saying that in certain in the African American communities, it's there's a lot higher than in the general population. Is that what
significantly
you're saying?
Yeah, significantly. We're seeing more visibility of Black atheists, African American atheists, minority groups that are saying, "Hey, we don't believe." And there was, a few years ago, there was a wonderful campaign that came out and was by the Center for Inquiry and the Todd Stiefel organization. They did a 12 city ad campaign, and what it featured was some of our historic free thinkers. So Langston Hughes was very prominent, A. Philip Randolph, et cetera. We have those, Neil Hurst. We have those names and prominent figures, including some of the civil rights leaders, you know, Bayard Rustin being one of them. And then you go much further back and talk about the Black Renaissance, and Hubert Harry, Triple H was also, an atheist. So when you start talking about, hey, we can be here, we exist, that we're seeing significantly more movement in. We're just not seeing a big enough shift to match the general population. And we kind of know why. And we continue to try and address that why and alleviate some of the reasons people feel as if they need religion. It's not that you don't, you know, if you need it, you want it, okay, fine. But there tends to be some very cultural sticking issues that conflate what identity is in the African American community. It's can you be a non-believer and be black? Well, I would talk to my grandmother about that if she was alive, and then she would tell me, absolutely not. There's no way. If you are black, you are a Christian, and most likely you are Baptist because of identity, and specifically because of what we, when we reach back and take a look at the civil rights era, there was a big anchor that was tied then, and it was civil rights was pushed regardless of the facts. Regardless of people like Dr. King being highly condemning of the church and surrounding himself with people who aren't necessarily Christians to move things, like Asa Philip Randolph was not a Christian. Bayard Rustin was not a Christian. When you talk about the March on Washington, these are not Christians. These are non-believers and humanists that see that they're trying to push and shape society in a very different norm. They're trying to reshape that. But when you take a look at what's reflected in society and what we're told, it came from the church. Well, the movement came from the church. The connection came from the church. Connecting to those people came through the church, that very important vein that connects people in the church. And because it's a very very critical social aspect of being black, yes, absolutely. But then you also have in the media, what is reflected in the media. You have some of the most prominent people in the media who are anti-atheists. D.L. Hughley famously made comments about atheists. Cat Williams done the same thing. And probably the most famous person in a list of anti-atheists would be people like Steve Harvey, who really condemned the idea of not having a God without questioning how he himself got this idea or definition of God. So we tend to try and say, it's not that you can't believe, but understand where your belief came from. And don't tell me that I'm not black because I don't believe like you, because black has never been a monolith. It's never been a monolith. We tend to vote like a monolith, but we're not a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear you, Alex. I'm sorry. I just couldn't hear you well. You're so soft-spoken. You say we tend to vote like... I didn't hear that part.
Yes, we tend to vote. We tend to vote like a big monolithic movement. But we're not. We come in various shades, and various beliefs. So that's what we continue to try and push. It's not don't believe, but understand that you can't define my identity through your lens.
Mm. We have heard of those experiences with certain groups, like Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormon, you know, excommunicate, you know, go along with all what they say. We may not excommunicate with, as you mentioned, the other denomination in the sense like Pentecostalism, whatever, but you're shunned. You know, you have to believe certain things or you're feeling that coldness, that's for sure. So we have to overcome these differences, and as you said, you know the reason why for them. So you want to kind of get into that, explaining the reason
The reason, well, I mean, it's actually really simple. And it, just understanding and studying a little bit of the history of Christianity and how Africans got that education, it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a long history lesson. It's you are given it by your ancestors who, yes, handed it down tradition after tradition after tradition, but it was given to them by Southern Baptist, predominantly. The idea of race tends to come from the Spanish Inquisitions and what the Catholics did with checking purity lines. So the idea of race itself comes from Christianity. But when you take a look at imparting or imbuing this knowledge of this very select version of Christianity, that came through slavery. There was, if you push as far back, unless you put the Middle East back in Africa, and that honestly depends on your geopolitical motivation, et cetera. If you say that the Middle East and many of the bridges are still part of Africa, then yes, you can say that Christianity did originate in Africa. But when most scholars discuss Africa and Christianity and the origins of Christianity, no, it did not come through Africa. So you probably would not have known about, even with the Ethiopian churches, that the Ethiopian church that came in much later, that tends to be an anomaly. It's there. It existed. But it came much, much later, and it would not have spread the way that it did without first being imported into the African belief system here in the States. And of course, a lot of that was given to us here and in the Caribbean through penalty of death, just outright. It doesn't mean that you wouldn't have gotten Christianity some other way, because you take a look at what is happening over on that continent right now. There are, you know, atheism doesn't really exist. There are several free thinking organizations that are addressing some of the issues with, you know, of course, in Uganda, you have the witchcraft councils in Uganda and some places out surrounding Nigeria, where just the idea of being a witch without, just being accused of being a witch without any evidence, can cost people their lives. Just flat out, witchcraft, there's no proof of it. I got a cold, she gave it to me. Do you have proof? Yes, yesterday I was fine. She looked at me, today I'm sick. And so that's there, and that's one of the competing beliefs there that is driving some form of secularism. But Christianity and Islam tend to be on a massive rise, and 20 to 50 years from now, the dominant religion is going to be Islam in Africa. At least it appears that way right now with current projections, and probably in the world. And even with, and it tends to be our U.S. version exported to Africa. Again, this is what Christianity is. You take it back. We're funding a lot of that through the South, as we have almost always. So, again, it's not that you wouldn't have gotten your Christianity another way, but the way that you got it was passed down and given to us by slave masters. And you could argue that was a tool to control, to minimize, you know, revolts or revolution, et cetera. That's all possible, and we can get into that level of rhetoric. But it also provided a form of comfort for many Africans at the time, not just African Americans, but Africans at the time, who were taught it. Some of them rejected it. Some of them were killed for doing so. But where there is desperation, where there is oppression, where there is poverty and hunger, there tends to be higher levels of religion. We've seen that in India, Africa, and here in the U.S., where even now, African Americans tend to be, again, the highest religious, and still tend to be not as well off as other people who are not.
We're going to take a commercial break right now, and for the next part, Annabeth is going to go ahead and continue with the question. So we're taking a break right now.
Children are a gift from the stars, and this Sunday, author Yvonne Williams will be our guest on Soul Purpose Healing in the first of a series titled Understanding Your Child's Motivational Gifts. Yvonne Williams is a powerful voice for cultural change in America, and she has written a wonderful series of children's books addressing the motivational gifts that are found in Romans 12, verses 6 through 8. Yvonne will be discussing how parents and adults can recognize their children's gifts and help them to thrive. So join us this Sunday, March 12th, and every second Sunday of the month for Wisdom with Yvonne on Soul Purpose Healing Blog Talk Radio. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Back, and that is going to be a wonderful series. It is not every second Sunday, it's per season, it's one per season. So I just want to make that correction, but definitely be with us this Sunday. The number that you dial is the same at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, Annabeth. Let you lead out with some questions.
Why don't I go ahead first, if you think that makes sense, Francis, and go ahead and mention the archived shows that you wanted me to share with people. Is this a good time to do that?
You've got a caller with a question. You want to open up their mic?
Okay. Sure.
Okay. 336-350,
your mic is open.
Hello?
336-350, check your mute button. Your mic is open. I think that's Mama AZ.
It is. Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
We can hear you.
Okay. Greetings, sir. You sound so muffled. I was really trying to hear what you were saying. I'd like to know first, how did Christianity get started within the melanated population of people? Because I did not hear that. My phone dropped. And also, I'm sure you are aware of the Baha'i faith, and I'm curious as to if you have anyone that is that you're connected with who's a Baha'i.
Alex, you want to go ahead and answer? Are you there?
Yeah, let me see. Does this sound a little bit better? I'm going to see if I can get a little bit less muffled.
Yes, sir. Okay, go ahead. Yes, sir, I'm listening.
Okay, for where we came, where Christianity came from, I addressed this a little bit earlier. We can talk about where Christianity came from generally, or how it got to the melanated population. There are two different ways that happened. The first one being, if you're talking about the melanin population on this side of the diaspora, if you're talking about what happened one boat ship prior to arriving here, so we're talking about the Caribbean, specifically Haiti, Jamaica, etc. They got Christianity through through their slave masters. That's how it got there. Prior to that, we had very much. And Dr. Gates has done a little bit of pretty good. Robert Gates has done some pretty good research on the flow and migration of those beliefs and how they came from Africa with us. In Haiti in particular, of course, voodoo being one of the more predominant religions or some sub-religions that still grip the island. There's voodoo, hoodoo. There are various versions of this Lao belief where you're talking about spirituality and multiple gods, etc. Those came with us, and we were able to go back into Benin, Ghana, and many of those areas, and we can trace those same belief structures. So where did we in the U.S. get that? Where did the other, New World islands get that? Well, they got that directly from their slave owners. Now, there are areas, again, but really very small pocket of original Christians who happen to be black, and that's not unexpected, given how quickly Christianity, kind of took hold and began to be spread throughout the Roman and Ottoman Empire later on. I mean, everything that wasn't Moorish saw a lot more of the light of day. And again, this goes right back over a 400 plus year war of ideology. So we got it through the slave master is really how we got in the U.S. We got it through migration in some places in Africa.
Okay. Now, clarify this. Let me overstand this. It was in Africa, and it was brought here. Over in Africa was
no. It
was it started.
It did.
By the
slave
master.
If you concede that places like Israel, which we now call the Middle East, if you concede that was part of Africa, which many geographers do not. I mean, you take a look at it, that is very distinctly the Middle East, and people have taken that out of Africa. Now, if that is true, then no, it didn't start in Africa. And again, this winds up being a almost a battle of semantics at that point. So if it started in the Middle East, it did not reach the southern edge of Africa. It didn't reach the eastern edges of Africa, the Ivory Coast. It never got there. So how did we get it? Well, we got it here in the States through the slave master. Our ancestors got it through them. Now, some of them rejected it. Some of them co-opted it. If you look at Haiti, specifically places like Haiti, they use that as a way of still worshiping their ancestral gods. If you take a look at the incarnation of Mary, they use her visage, her persona, but they don't refer to her as Mary. She's just one of the other gods, one of the other deities that they worship. And so when you look at Catholicism in Haiti, it's a mixture of beliefs. Well, the same thing can be said about here in the States, because, of course, you have so many different denominations and so many different faiths. And do the people in the North who call themselves Christian have the same belief as the people in the South or the West, etc.? So it is not immutable.
Okay. Also, are you affiliated, or is anyone from the Baha'i Faith affiliated with you?
With me, no.
Curious.
No, with me, no.
Okay, caller, you're sounding really, the call is getting bad. I don't know what you're trying to say. Do you hear me well?
I think she was asking whether Alex is connected to any members of the Baha'i faith, and if he had any comments about the Baha'i faith.
I do have a comment on that, because when you take a look at what is the Baha'i faith, they have a little bit of a different take on what God is, and this is where the collusion of ideas get really tight. The Baha'i believe in an omnipotent, personal, singular God that tends to be inaccessible. So that jives with a lot of what scientists would concede. If they said, you know, is there a God? Well, if there is, it doesn't fit the definition of anyone else's version of God, the one that would allow suffering here, but help me find my keys in the morning. That does not jive. That is logically incongruent for most people that are looking at it. Like, if there is a God, then it, according to the Baha'i, it's just really out there. And many universalists tend to have that idea. It tends to be more in line with some of the teachings of deists, who also reject the idea of there being this monolithic thing. They may take a look at the Bible or any other scripture and dismiss that. Many of the founding fathers were deists, who believed in this universe creator, or the universe as the creator. And if you got very literal, yes, it is. But is that where it stops? And for many of them, yeah, that's it. There's this thing out there that you don't interact with, except you are part of and are constantly interacting with, because you're part of it. But there's no creator spirit that is moving you. Now, are your actions and the actions of others compelling you into different situations? Absolutely. But is that spiritual, or is that more deterministic through self? And that's where we get into the gradations of belief.
So I have a question as to how this all pans out on a practical level. Like, there are atheist organizations. What's the division? Do you know anything about the division between the numbers of female atheists and men who are atheists?
Yep.
And leaders who are atheists? And, you know, like, how does this show up in our world on a practical level?
I tell people that, yeah, people walk up to me and they're like, oh, you're an atheist. I never met an atheist before. And I said, oh, you most certainly have. They probably didn't say anything because of some of the stigma, the social stigma that was historically there. But I guarantee you, you've met an atheist, probably more than one. You probably work with them as well. Again, we're looking at pushing 30% of the people out there saying none. And if you look at the Pew, the most recent Pew number, you're talking about 20% almost that are atheists. But even if you say it's 1 in 10, which is probably a low number of atheists, you take a look at Congress, you take a look at the people that you work with, et cetera, except for maybe a few skews here and there, you have people that are atheists. They just don't care. What most atheists are looking for is not dealing with that kind of stigmatization. And if we can get over that, that's fine. Are the atheists? Well, when you take a look at the stratification of the data, older people tend to not be atheists. And there may be changes to that over coming generations. But historically, you know, people that were born, in the 30s, 40s, and even some of the 50s, 65 or older, most of them are atheists, 90%+ are non-atheists. They're believers of some sort. Then when you take a look at the baby boomers, you're getting closer to something that's more normalized. Millennials, we're looking at, closer to the 30% on the millennials, and some millennials may be at 50% or greater of people that just do not believe, no religious affiliation, and then with that, a relative skew towards atheism is just not there. Now, the majority of atheists around the world tend to be white men. They also tend to be a little bit more privileged, have access to more capital and more education. Those tend to be, causation and correlation aren't the same thing, but those tend to be highly correlated when we look at those demographics. In the States, it's the same thing. However, of the atheists in the U.S., we're seeing about 45% of those atheists identify as women. So that's something that is a bit of a change that we haven't seen. And it has a lot of implications, especially if we're talking about women who happen to be mothers, because that tends to be the gate for future belief, access to education, access to the other social circles as well, because mothers tend to be the caregivers, and they tend to have higher levels of influence on their children, again, statistically speaking. So that's what we're seeing in terms of a demographic shift. And like I said, we may see with a population shift up to 50% atheists in the U.S. or secular numbers, in the U.S. within 20 years. That's a big number, given that we're at 69%, 69.7%-ish is the number of Christians out there today. That's a big shift. That's almost in line with the shift in population demographics based on race, where within the next 30 to 50 years, the minorities will be the super majority if you combine those versus whites only.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just saying. Okay, good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering about the atheist organizations. Like, apparently there is organizing in the world of atheism.
Oh, absolutely.
Who are running the organizations? What are the organizations? What do they do? What's their purpose?
There's a lot. there are. When I came on board, when I came out, there's maybe just a handful of organizations out there. The big ones being American Atheists, which does a lot of education. They also do a lot of, they'll intervene when it comes to church and state issues. But American Atheist tends to put out a lot of information when it comes to atheist or atheism. Usually, they also do the big billboards sometimes in Times Square and New Jersey. They're the ones that have gotten a little bit of the heat, and some of that is based on the particular leader out there, David Silverman, who is happens to be a white male. White male conservative, that white male conservative atheist. But the American Atheist Board consists of a little bit of diversity, white, black, Hispanic, male and women there. So that's the big one. Then we also have the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which exists almost solely to make sure that the line, the demarcation between church and state remains pretty much absolute. And we see the overreaching with creationism and discrimination. The Freedom From Religion Foundation will get there, and that is Annie Laurie Gaylor, a woman, and she's really in charge over there. And then Center for Inquiry does skepticism and education, and they do a lot of publications there. So those are the big ones. But then when you take a look at the notable speakers and the writers, et cetera, again, it tends to be many white men that push, that are seen as the not innovators, but the talking heads for atheism. But behind that is another shift. Black atheism tends to be a little bit different than white atheism because of the way that many people have gotten to their conclusion, which, yes, it can be academic, but many times it's associated with moral questions, the problem of evil, and looking at where you are in life and then saying, hold on a second, if I'm being told a story about religion and Christianity and it's not jiving up with the reality, then maybe there's a problem there. That kind of dissonance is a problem for Black atheists, especially when you say you pray more, it gets better. And reality is you can pray as much as you want and it won't. Depending on your denomination, all you have to do is pray versus doing more than prayer. So we have those. And in the Black atheist community, we see a lot of women that are stepping up. They are the voices, the Mandisa Thomases of the world. She is, you know, probably one of the more prominent Black atheists out there. She has Black Nonbelievers, Inc., which is a group of 11 different chapters here in the U.S. We have Dr. Sikivu Hutchinson out on the West Coast, who does Black Skeptics, and I think she has 3 chapters out there. And they both serve 2 different purposes, one being education and social issues, and the other one being to echo the message that you're not alone. Because being a Black atheist, you'll get that. I don't know how long ago it was, but someone, I think it was right after my Ebony magazine article came out, I had a woman who was about 55 years old. And she said, I read your article in Ebony magazine, and I've always struggled with faith and not believing. Since I was a child, and I grew up the child of a preacher, and I always felt broken. I would pray, and I wouldn't hear anything. I would call out, and I wouldn't hear anything. I would see people in churches talking tongues, and I wasn't able to do that. And she internalized this for years. And then she read the article, and this was several years ago now. And she decided that she was going to write me and say thank you for saying something that I didn't think other people that looked like me were capable of doing. And that, I think, is important, and it continues to be important for the visibility to be representative of, and I'll be a little repetitive, representative, necessary representation, because we do have these very different narratives that define who we are, and being able to take control of that narrative is where many of us are trying to push and say, this is how I define who I am. This is how I define my identity. It will not be dictated to me by any kind of dogma.
I have a question for you. Can you hear me?
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
This is Beata. I'm in the studio. There's a saying in terms of war and fighting that there are no atheists in a foxhole. How do you feel about that statement? And then I would also say, you know, people say the United States is a Christian nation. I would strongly disagree because when it comes to the Bible, it's kind of interesting. We have presidents put their hand on the Bible and they pledge to do certain things for our country, but then they sit down in a war room and plan to bomb, you know, 7 countries, which is what we're doing. So there's a lot of irony, but I think we're all searching for truth. And I heard a wise man say that if you're suffering on any level, then you have to think that maybe you're not in touch with truth. So first of all, how do you feel about the statement, there's no atheist in a foxhole when it comes to war? And then what would you, how would you define truth?
Okay. So there being no atheists in foxholes is so insulting to so many atheists who have served. I've known many who have. I've lost friends who were. And yes, and this is not just today, but in, you know, where they may be stationed, you know, peacetime, and oh, nobody cares. Until the idea that there are no atheists in foxholes comes from the sentiment that when it really matters, oh, you will change right before you die. You will change. Same thing with if you're on a plane and it's going down, you will spontaneously change. Again, that's very, very insulting given where many people have been through their journey. And there are military organizations out there, big ones, military atheist, it's called MAP, the Military Atheist Association, in foxholes. They exist. They pushed for the ability, which was not available 5 years ago, to on their tags when they ask for religion or religious identification, they can now select atheist. You couldn't do that 20 years ago. You couldn't do that 10 years ago. Now they get to use the word atheist, and they'll die atheist, and they'll die proud atheist. So saying that there are no atheists in foxhole, I'm thinking of Pat Tillman and Kurt Vonnegut and all of the other atheists who have fought in the country. I'm not talking about the wars and whether they're justified or not, because that's my personal belief that most of them are not. It's hard to justify war. But it's a disservice and an insult to tell those people that, no, your atheism is completely irrelevant. You will switch. You will turn. Because that's simply not true.
Well, I think another way to look at that, though, is that people who are men or women who are faced with fear to an extreme degree in a war situation, they will usually call on a higher authority for help. So it's interesting. You think it's a matter of preparation for war. Many men go in there not knowing what to expect. Others are cowards when it comes to foxholes. They're scared to death, and they call
but
on a higher authority, which it seems
but
natural.
But they won't. That's what I'm saying. But they won't. That is a myth. If you go in there and you say that, and I've seen them, I've spoken to them, I've seen them cry, I have dealt with the ones that have come back with PTSD because they've been hurt, they've seen their people die, they've seen all of this, they've gone through this. And was there any time that you felt the need to reach out to someone other than the person that was in the foxhole with you? No. So no, that's a myth. If you are a Christian, if you are a believer, yes, absolutely. Why wouldn't you? It makes sense that you would do that. But if you have said that you have never believed, why would that change? Because you're facing death. That's the same thing as people that continuously say, oh, they're spontaneous. They're spontaneous deathbed conversions. That don't happen. They said the same thing about Christopher Hitchens, which we knew was a lie.
Yeah, you're right. It depends on your belief system when you go into that war. If your belief system is very strong, that there is no higher authority that can save you in that situation, then no, you're going to reach out to the person next to you or whatever. But those who have built up a very strong belief system in a creator or the angels or messengers or other energy forces that are at work, then yes, they might close their eyes and say, oh, help me, Father. And sometimes that we hear many testimonies that they're comes. But what's your definition of truth?
Definition of truth. That's very subjective. Truth is what is knowable. What is knowable? What is testable? And sometimes that tends to conflict with with people's own versions of reality. Because if I have this presupposition of a certain worldview, then that truth is relative. Then I wind up testing the claims in that truth. Can you test it? Can you verify it? Is it repeatable? Were there witnesses? Were there credible witnesses? If it is talking about something like a resurrection, for instance, is there any indication of forgery in any of the documents that we're talking about, as most even biblical scholars will admit, even when it comes to the contextual versions of people like Josephus, who talks about, he was really the only person that came out at close enough to the time of Jesus to actually validate that there was a Jesus. Something that is highly contested, because we know, based on some of his writing and contextual analysis, that was probably a forgery. So those, being able to observe, being able to test, being able to set a criteria of what we accept as truth, is where we tend to argue. But I would say that, you know, a truth is something that is materialistically testable and something observable by other people.
Okay, Beth, you got about 3 minutes left. You want to wrap it up?
I am going to have Annabeth go ahead and do that, maybe just with the announcement, unless you have something you want to ask.
No, I want to ask you if you want to, if you want me to go over the archive.
Yeah, go ahead and
Alex, I would like to thank you so much for answering all of these questions. I know you answer these questions a lot, these kinds of questions. Thank you so much for your time, your focus, and, you know, your commitment to educating people about a different way of thinking from many of us. And giving us the update on what's going on in the world of atheism. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so we look forward to the second part, which we don't have a blog in April. So we will be off in April. But, yes, we look forward to continuing this conversation. And for those of you who perhaps were listening and not aware to press 1, because we didn't actually mentioned that you press 1 to ask questions, you will get an opportunity in the next part of this series. And we'll notify, but listen to these archives at Soul Purpose Healing. All are very interesting. Okay, go ahead, Annabeth.
So there have been a couple of programs that have already happened. The archives are available. One is the Lenten Transformation that was on March 5th. That was the Winter First Sunday Communion topic on the best gifts. And that was with Dr. Larry Hinkle. The recording does have some silence minutes. The reference number is 590, and it's a 27-minute recording. The phone number is 712-432-0399. And the code to get into the recording is 692301 hashtag or number sign. Then there was also Soul Injury, which was the first Tuesday, happened on the 7th of March. The topic was the Day of Christ Meditation, and that was with the co-host Mac Glover. So we just want to thank everybody for listening. And again, the number you can get into these calls is 712-432-0399. The code is 692301, hashtag or number. Francis, would you like to complete?
Okay.
Well, I'd just like to thank you.
I have no idea where I am, so that's why I have it on mute. Go ahead.
Okay, we want to thank everybody for joining us. Come back Sunday for Wisdom with Yvonne. Everybody have a great week.
take a bit of work. Oh, work. Now that you're here,